you focus a lot on criminal justice issues, and this sort of does tie into race, at least in my opinion. I want to hear yours. You look at our prison population right now, it is disproportionately African American.
Right.
And there seems to be this kind of hopelessness among many in the black community that the system is rigged against them, against many people in the black community, and that the laws are just recycling this kind of element. I mean, what do you think? And obviously you've written a lot about this.
I think that we are now using the criminal injustice system, and I refuse to dignify it with criminal justice system. We're using the criminal injustice system as just the latest means of racial control. Slavery was the first. Jim Crow was the second. We also had that period of convict leasing, which was essentially slavery by another name. And that was a system of racial control. And those things having been consigned to the dustbin of history, we now have this system of mass incarceration of African-American men. And it is shameful. You know, it speaks to the fact that we seem unwilling to learn the lessons of history, speaks to the fact that we seem unwilling to make the changes that history has told us that we need to make and that we keep promising we have made or are going to make. There's something wrong with a nation where African American men represent 13, 14, 15% of the people who commit drug crimes, but in some jurisdictions they are 90% of the people doing, you know, drug time. There's something wrong with a nation where you have a black defendant and a white defendant with the same record and the same age, same social standing, and the black one is 48 times more likely to be incarcerated than the white one. And there's something wrong with a nation not only where those things happen, but where they happen, as with the sorority we were talking about, in plain sight. Everybody sees them, and we just sort of accept them as normal. And that's a crying shame. That's a sin.
Speaking of Leonard Pitts, junior nationally syndicated columnist for the Miami Herald, spoke earlier today at the School of Social Works colloquium series. You're listening to Capstone News Now. Now, Mr. Pitts, I want to go back to this criminal justice issue. Mm-hmm. It's something that I'm passionate about. This summer, I was telling you, I'm from Miami. I spent the summer in the public defender, working for the public defender's office in the prison system. It seems to be the same case here in Tuscaloosa and across the country, that the public defender's offices, no matter where they are always being squeezed. Especially in Miami, where it was unconstitutional the amount of casework they had.
Right.
That affects African American defendants disproportionately more than any other.
Because they're disproportionately poor. Yeah, yeah. You know, I wasn't really aware of the dimensions of the problem until I read the book. Was it Chasing Gideon? I believe it's called, which is about the. It was written for the 50th anniversary of the Gideon case, which is the case that guaranteed defendants the right of counsel. Then you find out that, you know, despite what you hear the TV cops say all the time, if somebody's being arrested, you have the right to an attorney. Not so much. You know, you may have an attorney who has never met you and meets you on the day you go to court. You may sit in jail on some relatively minor charge for 6, 8, 9 months before you even meet an attorney. I mean, the system is insane, and it says something about us that we allow this to go on. You know, we pride ourselves on having this great justice system. We pride ourselves on not running kangaroo courts like they do in some of the less fortunate, and more, tyrannical places in the world. And yet we're countenancing this system where if you are poor and innocent, you may well wind up behind bars for something that you did not do, specifically because we will not fund or have not funded enough, funded the public defender's office enough to afford people to represent you.
And it seems that the system of plea deals seems to be kind of stacked against defendants as well. But what in particular, and kind of broadening to the entire, you call it the injustice system,
right.
What concretely do you think needs to be fixed? Because this is the last thing a lot of politicians want to do, is care about prisoners or what they seem as convicts.
Because they see don't want to be soft on crime, quote unquote. Yeah, I think there needs to be reformation of the injustice system first to handle the racial inequities. I think that some sort of safeguards need to be put into place so that these inequities can be caught a lot sooner than they are being caught. I think that, you know, I would like to see somebody sue. I would like to see somebody, you know, maybe a class action suit on behalf of some of these prisoners in some of these places where African Americans account for some, you know, these inc- incredibly disproportionate, you know, rates of prisoners being being incarcerated. Somebody perhaps needs to be held accountable for this before the justice system, the injustice system, will get serious about it. You know, and I don't, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing because you don't want a prosecutor to be liable for decisions made in good faith in the furtherance of his or her job. By the same token, they should not be able to just, even from unconscious bias, they should not be able to just willy-nilly incarcerate African-American men while letting everybody else go for the same crimes, or prosecute African-American men while letting other everybody else go for the same crimes and pay no cost for it, because the men are certainly paying a cost for it. The men are paying with years of their lives, they're paying with livelihood, they're paying with loss of their families, they're paying a tremendous price. The community is paying in terms of the loss of these men, in terms of the instability of the community, the instability of the families. The justice system, the injustice system, needs to pay for it as well.
What would the legalization of marijuana, in your opinion, do for or against the black community?
I would go further. I think that we need to legalize pretty much all of them, or at least decriminalize. And I think that what happens then is that you lose the ability to use drugs as your rationale, your lever, your hammer against African American men. But I think more largely, you know, we've spent $1 trillion+ in 40 years on the failed war on drugs. If we had some of that money to invest into our schools, to invest into our neighborhoods, to invest into healthcare, I think that you'd see a drastic change. Drugs, you know, and the desire for drugs, and I speak as somebody who's never in life used anything stronger than an aspirin. They used to have to threaten me to get me to take that. You know, the whole deal about about drug use is that we're talking about something that it's like prohibition. Once the moment that prohibition ended, Al Capone and all these guys were out of business. Okay, with drugs, we need to consider the same tack, and we need to start to treat it as a health concern, healthcare issue, as opposed to as a criminal injustice issue. We treat smoking as a healthcare issue. We treat drinking as a healthcare issue. And I think there are some numbers which show that drinking actually causes more property damage and more loss of life and more, you know, difficulty than drugs. But we treat this as a healthcare issue. Why? What is it that makes drugs so radically different? I really don't understand.
I'll ask you one last question. Sure. Politically, and then I want to kind of transfer to some other things. This government shutdown, I think objectively most people will say, is pretty much an embarrassment.
Yeah.
What do you think this, you know, kind of says about America and it signals around the world?
I think it signals that we are unserious. I think it signals that we are... I can't improve on that, actually. I think it signals that we are profoundly unserious people, and that we have a government that is, this is not just gridlock. This is a government of petulance and pique, and basically, you know, government by temper tantrum. And it is, as the president has noted, we're talking about one faction of one party in one house of Congress that is doing this. And that is, to me, that's an amazing thing, and it's, as you say, it's an embarrassing thing. I'm glad that I'm not on foreign soil right now, because I would want to answer the inevitable questions. What is wrong with your country? I don't know, pal. I don't know.